Hey, this is Pete Lasparas from Harum Scarum, and I give you the right to rock.
The right to rock.
Texas, you're listening to the Right to Rock Podcast, the only heavy metal and hard rock show on the net made by fans for fans. And now get ready for two guys who are so metal, they pour motor oil on their cereal. It's Genghis and Ragman.
This is Genghis.
This is Ragman. And we have a special night for you. An evening with a featured artist. So we want to give you the most of what Genghis and I can do with an artist. We want to give you everything we can do with an artist. So, that's a killer Masterpiece Theater music.
That's very good.
I feel like I'm classical or something like this. I don't know how I did.
It makes me want to speak in a very elevated tone. I want to say a shout out to all of our viewers and listeners.
I feel English. English and
starting
Russian at the same time. I don't know.
Starting to feel very British. As I sip upon my ale.
We should toast to our guest in Biju Adu because we have a great interview.
That's right.
That's almost poetic.
I thank you all for joining us. Please
thanks
listen
to
our interview and enjoy.
And we will talk to you next time.
Cheers.
See ya. Huzzah.
Huzzah.
Interviews. I mean, the Harum Scarum that we're doing tonight, but also the King Cobra that we did. We had talked to all those guys individually. They were great interviews, and it made sense to kind of do an overall show with them together.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what's really, I think, the idea of the Evening Wits anyway, is either it's an interview that was so big in its scope, that, you know, the topics that were talked about with one person or one guest, or a number of guests all from the same band where, you know, it made sense to put it together rather than release them separately and just have one bigger sort of show.
Oh, yeah.
Dedicated
yeah.
to that artist.
And two, and look at this. If you're not aware, Harum Scarum went back in. And this is a topic we've talked about before.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't own the rights to Boot Swings, so they went back and re-recorded it to get the rights to the music. They have done a phenomenal job. A really good job doing it. And it's called Mood Swings 2. The package comes with a DVD. Unfortunately, I haven't seen that. But, you know, I'm going to go buy it because I want to see the DVD, which is the making of the CD.
That would be awesome.
So,
just like the Winger stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't
exactly.
he kind of release all that when he made one of those albums? I don't remember which one
it was. I think it was The Making of Four or something like
four?
That.
Okay.
One that we freaked out on that one part.
Yeah, where fucking Rev's ripping the shit out of some.
Oh, stuff. Yeah. So wouldn't it be cool to see Pete, like, ripping his ass off?
Oh, yeah, because Pete's another badass himself. I love his guitar playing.
Very underrated. I mean, they didn't have the exposure in America, which they should have, but they didn't. Just, you know, sometimes that doesn't work out for some bands. But the guy's a freaking monster. There's no doubt about that. So,
yeah.
What we did is we were able to catch up with Harry Hess, which is a frequent guest on the show, friend of the show.
Both of them really nice guys. Pete's really easy to talk to, and Harry is for that matter too. It's always a pleasure to talk to those guys. And what better occasion, like we were just saying, than for them to be able to release probably one of their best albums, right? Largely considered their best or most popular, at least.
It's just like kind of like their Images and Words by Dream Theater.
Right.
It's the album everybody says, I want you to go back and play that. And
which, of course, we talked about, blessing and curse. But, you know, hey, is it ever really bad when you think about it, even in the bad times, to say, you know what, people still want to hear the shit out of something we do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I guess, it can be kind of like, oh, that again? You know, we've done other things, but at the same time, hey, it keeps people still listening to us. New fans are come right. along that still go, holy fuck, who is this?
Well, I think they saw it as a kind of a curse because everybody focused on that one record. But now I think after they've been apart for 5 years, because as you guys know, Harum Scarum broke up 5 years ago, and this is the first thing they've done. And actually, I'm not going to give it up, but in the interview, it kind of tells you how this whole thing evolved. So, tell you what, let's talk to Harry Hess first, and we'll catch you on the flip side.
Hey, this is Harry Hess from Harum Scarum. You're listening to the Gingis Bregman Show. Horns up!
Guys, you're on live with Ragman, Mono E Mono, with, I can't believe I'm saying this, Harry Hess from Harum Scarum. Give it up, people. Hey, Harry, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks.
I didn't think I'd ever say that again, or at least it may have been a little bit longer. There was always hope. There was always hope. And then the next thing I don't think I'd ever hear coming out of my mouth was, we're going to be talking about the new version of Mood Swings. So
yeah, you couldn't predict that.
No, sir. Well, I tell you what, let's start from the beginning. I know the last time we talked, you had just come off doing your solo record, which had a bunch of your buddies from Harum Scarum on it.
Right.
And you had mentioned that this, like a show or something, might be in the works to do to commemorate Mood Swings. Can you kind of tell me where we left off and how things progressed?
Well, you know, we hadn't been playing as Aaron Stern for about 5 years, but, you know, we kept getting offers to do festivals and live shows and stuff like that. And we were just kind of, you know, burnt out on that whole thing. And so it had been about 5 years, and there was a promoter from the UK that called us up about doing Firefest in London, or just outside of London. And it's a festival we've done a few times in the past. And so the promoter's kind of become a buddy, and he kept calling me and asking me about this, said, wouldn't it be cool if you guys came over and played the whole Mood Swings record? And I said, why? He said, well, because it's the 20th year anniversary. I said, oh, right. The more we talked about it, the more we decided that, you know, we would make this a little bit of an event. It, you know, quickly turned into what we've done with it today, which has kind of made this the re-recording, because we don't own the masters, Warner does. And so basically we decided that we were going to re-record the record, put on three new bonus tracks, you know, so it's not just a strict re-record and there's nothing new for fans. And so basically that's it. And, you know, we started in January, I'd say, and we just finished it basically around mid-June, whole thing. So the whole re-record and the writing, it took a while, but we finally got through it, thank God, and here we are playing.
Well, it's awesome, man. I got to ask you, how tough was it to go back and tackle some of those tracks? We've talked in the past, and your voice is still very strong, and Pete's still got the chops, but was it challenging going back and trying to do some of that stuff?
You know what? I didn't think it was going to be, but when I actually started, it was. And it wasn't so much like a matter of, wow, I can't sing like this. It wasn't a range thing or something like that. Or it was more of like, I'm just such a different singer, and he's a different player. Believe it or not, we're just so different from what we were back then. I kind of liken it to a bunch of Neanderthals plugging away at something that we didn't quite understand. And now, you know, being, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, studio musicians, because that's what we do every day, we're way more confident as players, singers, producers, and we know what we're playing now. But I remember even back then at the time, like, we're just going for it. But in that being said, there's something really, you know, to be said for not knowing what you're doing and just really giving it your all, because it's a very honest and natural approach to making records and singing and playing. And that's kind of what's the challenge, is that we're not like that anymore. We don't approach it that way. So singing for me, when I went back and listened to the originals, I went, wow, man, I'm just kind of on the edge of just barely not being able to do this. Where now I'm way more refined and in control, but I don't sound the same. So that was really the only challenge, was kind of getting back to that mindset of just going for it and that raw energy. So, you know, I think we captured it. I think it turned out good. And a lot of the moments I think even turned out better. But that was really it. We were just trying to keep, I guess, you know, for lack of a better word, to preserve what was good about it. And just expand on what we thought we already started back then, now made it a little more of a refined 2013 production.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I got to tell you, I was jamming to Stranger Than Love a little bit ago, and I got the goosebumps, man.
We'll be right back.
that song so much. Good to hear.
I love that track. That's actually, I love the guitar ripping tracks, the heavier tracks, but as a kind of a power ballad thing, that is, to me, one of my favorite power ballads of all time.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice.
Let me ask you this about Pete. Did Pete, I know he had gotten away from a lot of the Guitar Hero type stuff, and I know he never really considered himself one, but I know we here at the show do, because some of his friends are phenomenal. Did he have any issues? And we're going to try to talk to him as well, like we spoke about, but was he challenged too, or was it a challenge like, wow, this could be fun to try to get my chops up to do this stuff again?
Yeah, and again, like, you know, knowing Pete and our discussions about it, I mean, he's like me in that way. We don't kind of go out of our way to be flashy or overdo it for the sake of overdoing it. So I think when Pete talks about not, you know, wanting to, you know, just rip as a guitar player for the sake of ripping, I know what he means, you know. Like, it has to be well thought out, and it has to be done for a reason. And when you've done it a million times, I don't wonder why you would do it again or keep doing it. But, you know, the mood swings thing was very different because for us, I mean, it really defined what the band was at that time. So the first record was a little bit more, I would say, you know, safe, or it was just a little bit more linear with regards to personality. So when mood swings came out, it was really a lot of Pete's personality as a guitar player, which maybe you didn't hear as much on the first record, and the songwriting really started to develop in many different ways, especially Pete and I collaborating as songwriters. So, you know, when Pete talks about that era, and I do as well with him, we kind of look back at it very fondly, but always with that, you know, double-edged sword of not wanting to just do the same thing over and over again. So it's always been misconstrued as we have a little bit of a weird attitude about it, but which is true. But at the same time, we can also look back at Mood Swings and really enjoy it for what it was. And I still say to this day, for what we knew at the time and the abilities that we had, I think we made a great record, and I really love it and I'm proud of it. But, you know, doing it again in 2013, it was a different goal for us. You know, we were just saying, if we knew then what we knew now, it would have been a lot easier record for us to make. But it doesn't change anything. Like, we still thought we nailed it on the parts. Like, we didn't know when we started this if we were going to change solos, change some parts, revamp some vocal melodies. But the more we got into it, the more we thought, you know what, I think we like it the way it is. And that was kind of cool, even realizing that for ourselves, that we kind of got it right the first time. But we didn't want to really screw it up and fuck with it too much, so we said, let's just re-record it and stand on the merits of the songs. But like I said, a 2013 version of it. So, you know, we're hot and cold on it all the time, but if you catch us on a good day, we're proud of it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, that was my next question, was how tempting was it to go back and tweak some things? And it's been a while since I've heard Just Like I Planned, but it seemed the arrangement seemed a little bit different on that one. Am I off? Or I was going to pull out my original copy, but I didn't have time before we talked today.
Walking a dead street all my life, watching the day slip into the night, and no matter how hard I try, the darkness seems to find me, but your sweet tender eyes have always been my guiding light. And I know the world's unkind, but something's resurrected me, and now I'm gonna wait till the moment's right. So
I mean, that was originally done song. It's a vocal a cappella song.
Yeah. So, the acoustics on
there.
Yeah,
so... Yeah, and really, like, I decided 100% before we even started recording the record that I wasn't going to do that again. First of all, because it was so time-consuming, and the second part of it was, what would be different, you know? So there was really no point attempting to do that again. So I asked Pete if he could work up an acoustic version of it, and then we'd take it from there. And we kind of just left it very minimal, changed the arrangement a little bit, but other than that, it's just the vocal guitars and a few other little elements.
Well, it works. It sounds great, man. Let's talk about the new tracks. Were these tracks that might have been left over from Mood Swings, or is this all new stuff?
No, they were specifically written for this. So we had no tracks. We really exhausted everything we'd ever written. We never re-recorded anything that we even thought was close to a song. By the time we packed it in 2008 after that Hope record, we had no new material or no even bits and that we hadn't turned into something we thought was worthy of working on. So when we knew we signed up to do these three bonus tracks for this release, we had nothing. So, but we knew what we wanted to do. We wanted to do something very involved and intricate, not just phone it in. And so, you know, we started working hard on these songs and the arrangements, the lyrics, melodies, all the backing vocals, all the intertwining parts. So we really put a lot of those three songs, and quite honestly, if it would have been a whole record like that, it would have taken over a year to do. But since it was only three songs, we could really focus on them and put everything we had into them. So, and again, I think it shows when you listen to it that it wasn't just written and recorded in 10 minutes, and we put a lot into those songs. So we're happy with those as well.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They really flow into the rest of the record really nicely. I think the one I like the most right now is probably Anarchy.
Cool. Yeah.
Do you have a story on how that song came together?
I think I had that chorus idea. I presented it to Pete. Pete had some riff stuff, and so we ended up plowing a couple of ideas together. And then I had this really weird piano thing that I wanted to work into a song, and I literally just jammed that into that song as well. And when I say jam, we're, you know, talking about trying to massage some parts into other parts. But that was really a song where those two parts collided, like, in that way, and we just made it work. And we weren't so sure that, you know, that was a thing to do. But originally I tried it, and I was like, yeah, that's cool. Let's keep running with it and see where it goes. And then it built into this whole epic thing of that breakdown and the piano deal and the vocals. So I love listening to that because it's a fun little journey. It's a few different vibes, and it kind of says a lot in, I guess, the 4.5 minutes that it is. So... pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And I just want to thank you as a fan, and being a big fan of the Mood Swings record, and actually a fan of your entire catalog. But I just not half-assing this, and it shows, just like you said, it shows that you guys had really worked hard on these tracks and really wanted them to be the best thing you could do. And I think that's been your motto all along, ever since you've been here on Scarum, is we're going to do the best we could do at the time where we are at this point in time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can, I guess, pretend or talk about doing it differently, but really when you're in the trenches and you're doing the work day to day, like, it can't be any other way, because I mean, at least for me and Pete as well, and we've always kind of been on the stage with this, we'd rather say, let's not do it at all if we're not going to either A, really love it, and B, be into it, or kind of is the same thing, or correlates at least with each other, because you just can't put in that kind of time if you're not interested, you know? So we've always been on the same page with regards to that, and these songs are no different, and even more so, because, you know, when you go away, I guess whether we, Pete and I never really talked about this, or, you know, maybe, you know, you don't even consciously know it, but when you go away and you come back and say, we're coming back, I think you gotta step up to the plate and do something a little bit special, or at least better than what your average was back then. So we really felt with these three bonus tracks that not only are you putting them beside the Mood Swing songs, which arguably were, you know, that was kind of our record that people know us for, so they're going to be beside those songs, and it's your comeback moment as well. So we felt strongly that they had to be, you know, at least interesting pieces that even if people walked away and went, whatever, they would feel exactly what you just described, that, you know, no matter what, they at least didn't phone this in, and they put in some effort, and hopefully that's the way people look at what we do, because I think that's first and foremost. The most important thing to me when people talk about the work that we've done, it's not whether they come up to me and say, oh, I like the song, or I don't like that song, or this record's my favorite, but that people realize that we're actually doing it for the right reasons, and that we first and foremost put the music. So that's kind of, at least at this stage, what it's about for me.
Well, another track that of the new ones that I really dig is, and there's only three, but Brighter Day. I really dig that track as well. Can you kind of tell us how that track came together?
Like the whole intro riff that you hear, he just gave me that. They liked that, and then I started working on it, coming up. Basically, I'll put on a disc like maybe 6 or 7 riff ideas that Pete gives me, and I like starting like that because it forces me, to kind of think outside the box, because where I'm writing pop stuff or we're trying to do straight ahead stuff, tend to conform to kind of some other melodies or what I'm, you know, doing. But when we're doing the Harum Scarum stuff that's a little bit more off the beaten path, I make it a point to make it work whatever he gives me in that sense. And that kind of ends up meaning that a lot of times I can't figure out something or I can't make it work. But I am literally looking for guitar moments that excite me, and then what can I do with it? So when those three things happen, then I know I have it, or a part of the song, and then I document that. And then when I have a ton of those, I go back and put things together. So a lot of times I'm piecing together pieces. But with that particular song, it was musically basically the way you hear it, and then I put lyrics and melody on top of it.
Oh, nice. Nice. What a good tune that is as well. Actually, all three tunes are really cool, but at first, those two are the ones that are really kicking my butt. as far as, the, I guess, re-release, you also have a bonus DVD. It's kind of a making of the Mood Swings 2.
Yeah, you know, again, when we first started talking about doing this, we were really concerned that there was no value, you know, for the fans to buy this or even care about this. So one of our main goals was to add sort of value to it. Thought, you know, for fans watching a little bit of a making of the studio, or at least talk about the record and the songs and the history of the band, and take back 20 years to our mindset when we were first making the original Mood Swings, and now fast forward 20 years later to us remaking it. So, I mean, I like that idea and that concept. Whether we nailed it in that little video that we did, I'm not sure, but that was really the plan, that we were just trying to give fans some sort of insight into what we were thinking back then and what we're thinking now.
Awesome. Well, last time we talked, you mentioned, I guess, the Firefest show, that would be possibly part of this packaging live show there. Are y'all still looking at possibly filming a new show of you guys doing Mood Swings in its entirety?
Yeah, you know, we're doing a show in Chicago at the end of the month, and you know what, we've been talking about literally just doing some really low, I don't want to say, like almost like bootleg recordings of the stuff. Like just record every night that we play, because we're going to be doing around 16 shows. We're doing a couple in Japan, we're doing the Chicago, we're doing the UK, and then we go and do a whole European thing, and we hit about 8 or 9 different countries on this European tour. So it would be too involved to really, like, do it properly every night. I mean, like, have a recording rig and do all that stuff. It would be crazy to set that up every day. We're literally flying times, you know, the next morning to another country, set up, play in another country the next day. So it's not really feasible for us to do it any other way, but we do plan on filming it in some way, shape, or form, even if it's like a bootleg kind of you know, version of a live record kind of thing. At least if we document it, maybe we can go back later and piece it together and pick the good songs from certain nights and piece something together that we can offer people in the future.
That would be awesome. I would be first in line to purchase that bad boy for sure.
Awesome.
Well, hey, what's the plan here? Are you guys going to continue on, or is this kind of a one-off deal, or what's the plan for Harum Scarum going forward?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, probably like I've said in the past, I mean, ours is a bit of a weird and unique situation with regards to, you know, the personal members in the band, where we all constantly work together on other projects. So it never feels like the band's broken up, because, like I said, we work together all the time. It's just really a matter of, do we have the energy, do we think we could keep up the quality of making another record and doing it at the level that we want to do it at? So now that we just did these three songs, I mean, they would have been three great songs for a new record, and now we'd be starting all over again. So quite honestly, the challenge would be is to write songs that we feel would be good enough to put on another Harum Scarum record, and how long would that take, and what would be involved. So that's kind of what's up in the air right now. It's not really a matter of whether we would want to do it. And yeah, I'd love to. If, you know, wake up tomorrow and we'd have those 12 songs, I'd be happy to record them and put them out. It's just, you know, it's easier said than done, that's all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, Harry,
yeah,
before we let you go today, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans?
Well, again, you know, we're always blown away by the people that have hung in there as long as they have and you know, followed our careers and continue to stick with us. So, you know, as usual, a big thanks to those guys and people like yourselves for perpetuating the rock insanity. And, you know, it's awesome. So, you know, we're really looking forward to getting out there. Like I said, we're going to hit a bunch of different countries and see, you know, the fans, and we're playing a record that, you know, that we know everybody's interested in hearing. So, really looking forward to getting out there and meeting everybody. So, that's kind of the plan. Forward. Just have a good time playing these songs in a little bit.
Awesome. Well, let me ask you one last question here in regards to touring. You've mentioned Europe, Japan, and a show or two in the U.S. Is there any other plans to do any more touring in the U.S., or is it just going to be strictly... I know the Chicago date. That's part of Melodic Rock Fest, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Are there any other dates planned in the U.S.?
No, not at this time. I mean, you know... I don't know if you know, I mean, we were never really officially released in America, so the problem is that, you know, there's no promoters that know us and would be willing to take a chance on bringing a band. So it's really a matter of that. The countries where we can go and play are typically countries where we've had releases, had sort of success, and, you know, we're able to do it financially, you know, so, but to keep, you know, to get a band over and even fly them, put it up in hotels, and, you know, just those general costs, it's enough to scare people away most of the time. So it's never a matter of us not wanting to do it. It's just the economics of it, and talking about a specific territory where we don't really have a fan base that anyone can latch on to and say, okay, you sold X amount of records in this country, so therefore you should be able to draw X amount of people. If they can't do that, it's very difficult for them to take a chance and bring in a band.
Yeah, understood. It's all about the dollars and cents, that's for sure.
It kind of is, yeah.
Well, Harry, as always, welcome back. Thanks again for coming in and chatting with us. It's an honor to talk to you. We appreciate you coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on the RightToRock.com. And we want to tell everybody out there, go get the new Mood Swings 2 on Frontiers Records. It is awesome. It's a really, really nice package. So go get it. Harry, thanks again, man. Great to talk to you once again.
All right, awesome. Okay, I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
The first time we've talked to him, I think, when he was a member of Harum Scarum. We've talked to him on all the solo project stuff he's done.
Right.
So this was really cool. Really cool to talk to him. We just focus on the Harum Scarum stuff.
Right. But he's another one of those guys, like the guys we talked to before with King Cobra, that they keep busy all the time.
Yeah.
Harry's always up to something. And Pete, seems like maybe less so, right? But he still keeps busy. But
no, Pete's equally as busy.
Oh, excellent.
I mean, they're both producing. Pete's doing some stuff. He'll tell you about in the interview. What he's playing and doing some side stuff. And, I mean, both guys were involved with the Canadian Idol for a long time. And I think, to me, and I brought this up to Pete, which you'll hear shortly, is I kind of consider them somewhat of a success story in that, you know, A, they did make it real big in the U.S. I mean, they had a pretty good Japanese following and European following. But when they break up, both guys have highly successful careers, you know, doing other stuff, production, staying in the music industry, like you kind of keyed on.
Right.
You know, maybe maybe not all hard rock. I mean, Harry's probably stuck more to the hard rock stuff than Pete has. Pete is kind of ventured out into a country type stuff and some mellower type.
I think that's probably what I was thinking when I said that, is just that he hasn't stuck necessarily in the same genre. Kept busy, but doing other stuff. And so not so much in the rock format like most other people stay in, which is cool. And I think it's all these also maybe a little more typical of guitarists, you know, as opposed to singers. You know, guitarists tend to kind of do, you know, more session type stuff and maybe even branch out and say, you know what, I've been doing this for a while. Like Mick Mars, right? Mm-hmm. He's in, you know, fucking Motley Crue, but he likes playing blues.
Yeah.
You know, and so he hasn't done like a blues album, but he still goes out and jams with other people and stuff, and a lot of artists do that, like I say, especially guitarists. So it's nice to know that, you know, he's still out doing stuff, keeping busy, keeping active, keeping the chops up, really, more than anything else.
Dude, not to change the subject, but Das Boot! That place has Das Boot!
Did it really?
Oh, by the way, guys, I guess we didn't tell you, we're actually in the car, just kind of taking a drive.
We're going up to PCH, Holmes?
PCH.
Now, speaking of which, we'll go off topic just for one second.
Sure.
Guess what I'm getting? You got the Das Boot. I got Das Horn is coming home.
Oh, you got the horn? Did you contribute to that thing?
No. It's now they're just selling it online through ThinkGeek, so I got it. It's coming next week.
Oh, dude, I got to get one. We got to
get the horn, dude. Go to ThinkGeek.com and get it. This isn't an ad for ThinkGeek, but...
Thank God Joe's not here. But yeah, we should get matching horns. We have matching Das Boots.
Exactly.
So... Oh, dude, that'd be cool. Yeah, next time we get together for a full show and have some beer over there.
Yeah, next time we do, I'll bring it. You'll get to see the horn, Holmes.
But actually, our very next show, you guys will hear, is our Halloween show. So we're actually getting all our gear together for a zombie hunt, and that's coming up really soon. So
we got to get our shit for it. I've been doing my pull-ups, my sit-ups, my sit-downs, and a lot of beer drinking. You know?
Exactly. But, so back to Harum Scarum, like I said, something we've touched on before, these artists go back and they regain their music that they wrote, recorded, and so forth. What a great thing to bring back such a classic record. So,
and good for them too, more going back to what we've talked about before, and kind of touching back on that. Good for them being able to find a way to take back what was already theirs anyway.
Yeah.
And that is the whole getting the rights to the music. If you don't know, I mean, we can go over it real quick. If you don't know, that obviously it's not that the record company owns your music when you write it. They own the recording of the music. Right. So in perpetuity, you know, you can't, like if you wanted to sell it yourself or you wanted to do something with it yourself or you quit and go with another company, record company or something like that, you can't access that music, those recordings, not even like the master tapes, if you want to do some remixing or something.
Mm-hmm.
You don't own it. You own the song, you own the lyrics, you know, the music that you wrote, but you don't own the recording of it.
Right.
So what they do is they go, well, no problem, I'll re-record the motherfucker myself. And today, with technology as pervasive as it is, a lot of people have their own home studios and stuff.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to re-record shit yourself, find somebody to master it for you, I guess, and all that, and mix it. And turn it back out, and it's there. It is. It's all yours again, and you can make the exact same album again if you want to. It's your fucking music.
Well, you know what? What I found interesting when I first heard this was going to happen was, okay, these guys did this record in their 20s. They're now in their 40s. Do they still have the chops? And man, they do. So, if not better, you know.
But yeah, I love too that. When they do this, I wonder if, because I don't, I myself haven't given it that good a listen yet, to be honest, and that is, did you think that they changed it much, or did they just go note for note back into it?
And maybe
that's
subtle.
And maybe that's a larger question, philosophically. Mm-hmm. When you go back and you say, hey, everybody loves that album, but you know what, after I made that album years later, and even when I play it live or something, I like doing this other thing for the solo that I always thought was better.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go back and re-record it, do you have to make sure that I re-record it exactly note for note, or what's the point, or is it okay to do that?
Yeah, and I posed that question to Pete and Harry as well, which we just heard what Harry's answer was, but Pete's got a pretty interesting answer as well. And I was able to, luckily, key in on a couple songs where he said, well, yeah, I'm glad you noticed that because, yeah, it bugged me the way we did this, and I changed it up a little bit. So, I tell you what, the suspense is giving me goosebumps. How about a little Pete L'Esperance?
Let's do that.
Well, all right, guys. Well, before we go into Pete, we just want to tell you thanks for all the support over there. I want to give you two big holds up.
Hey, this is Pete L'Esperance from Harem Scarem, and you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up!
Up to do.
Absolutely.
So, I tell you what, we did something a little different with Harry. From Harry, we had talked to him with some of his solo projects and stuff that had gone on over the last 5 years or so, but we haven't talked to you in, God, I don't know how long. It's probably been at least 4 years. What's been going on since Harem Scarem called it quits in 08, and what have you been doing?
Well, I've been doing a little bit of everything, you know. It's the music business, as it is now, is a bit of a different game, as I'm sure you know. And I'm doing everything. I'm engineering stuff for people. I'm playing guitar on stuff. I'm playing bass on stuff. I'm producing stuff for people. I'm mixing stuff for people. So I'm doing the whole gamut of studio work, including I'm not so much doing it now, but I was starting to get into some commercial work and writing commercials. And recording them, and I'm doing voiceover work, you name it. I've got a studio in my house, so I basically am doing just all things musical. So that's kind of what I was doing. In the meantime, I made another record, made another solo album, a very adult piece of work. So I did that, and for the last couple of years, my focus is kind of shifting back to getting out playing live.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of been the thing, man. It's all things musical. I mean, all balanced with family life. And I've got an amazing wife and daughter, and, you know, I've got a great life that way. And it's balancing all things musical with family.
Well, I guess the solo record you had put out was Fade Into Stars.
Yeah, to say I put it out would be a stretch, because I think I mentioned it twice on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like it ever had any, it's not like it ever had any clout behind it or a label or anything like that. I just basically make music because I have to.
Well, it's a way to express yourself, you know, outside of when you're not doing Harem Scarem, though you weren't in the band at the time because it wasn't around. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's a way for you to express yourself, and, I mean, does it feel good to do that stuff, or do you, you know, on your own, or do you enjoy more doing more of the studio session work?
You know, I really like it all, to tell you the truth. I mean, everything in moderation, right? And working in the music business is kind of the same thing for me, because I actually have figured out a way and you know, spent enough time working on every aspect of it that I kind of do a bit of everything. I like the fact that I get to kind of work with other people on their music. I get to write with other people. I get to play on people's music that I have nothing to do with the writing, or I get to mix people's music who I've never heard the record before. You know, it's like, I just kind of try to do it all, and now adding the whole live element into it, I'm pretty much covering everything I can think of. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. Well, let's fast forward 5 years. Harum Scarum's back. You re-recorded Mood Swings. How did the process start? I know you and Harry are working together regularly, but, I mean, was this something you guys were kind of tossing around, or did Frontiers come to you guys and say, hey, we want this, and y'all decided to go a little bit more full-blown with it?
No, you know what? It actually came up because, and I'm sure Harry's probably told you this story as well, I'm sure they'll be quite similar. A friend of ours in the UK that runs Firefest basically came up with the idea of, hey, why don't you, it's the 20th anniversary of Mood Swings, and we went, really? Is it really? We didn't even know, of course, because we're like that. And, you know, and he said, well, why don't you come to the UK and play Firefest and play the whole Mood Swings record? And we were like, well, you know, it's been 5 years, so it's not a completely embarrassingly short amount of time to be kind of off the radar. It's the 20th anniversary of Mood Swings, so if there's ever a time to kind of come back and do something, maybe it's now, you know. And I personally had been out on like a six-week tour with an amazing Canadian country singer, heritage artist here named Michelle Wright. So, I mean, I had sort of got back into the playing thing, and that's what was kind of leading me back in, and then we got that call, and then it turned into, well, why don't we maybe re-record the record? That way we'll own the masters. We can, you know, do a few new bonus tracks on it and send them out and see what people think, and we'll make it a package, you know. We'll make it something kind of special for the fans to show their appreciation, or to show our appreciation, because it's been 20 years of people literally talking to us about that record, so... You know, it was, it all just kind of came together. The idea kind of came together at the same time as the tour sort of came together. It all happened at the same time, and here we are today.
Well, has this thing kind of snowballed a little quicker and gotten a little bit bigger than what you initially anticipated?
Well, I guess, yeah. I mean, we're doing a pretty extensive European tour. We're heading off to Japan on Wednesday for a couple dates in Tokyo. We really had no plans for this thing in the beginning other than re-recording the record and potentially going to do that one festival in the UK. So, yeah, I guess to answer your question, it's definitely snowballed into something bigger than we had anticipated in the beginning, for sure.
Well, what was it like going back and revisiting this record? And we've talked about this record before because, as you know, we're big fans of it, but we're also big fans of your other catalog. I think Voice of Reason may be my second favorite record of yours, you guys.
Nice.
But was it hard to go back and listen and say, whoa, how the hell did I do that? Or was it as easy as picking up the guitar and kind of, you know, just fooling around a little bit and you got it back? Because the stuff, guys, that you're not familiar, Pete's stuff away from Harum Scarum is vastly different than what he does with Harum Scarum, in that it's not as heavy and not as flashy guitar-wise. Not to say what you're doing, you know, that's...
Oh, no, totally, man. Totally.
Yeah, not to say that stuff's not challenging either, but, I mean, there's some pretty good guitar acrobats on Mood Swings for sure. What was it like?
It was a trick, you know, like, on a couple levels. First off, I mean, going back to the record, we knew we weren't going to change things because we're not the kind of band that goes into the studio and, you know, here, let's write the songs in the studio and then I'm going to play this solo and then you play it and you improvise the whole thing and then it goes down and, you know what I mean, then every night I play something else live. Like, the songs are written to the nth degree when we do something. So the solos are all written, they're all very specific. I don't go out and improvise guitar solos. Sometimes at the end of the songs we'll do an extended jam where I can kind of rip a bit that's not kind of, you know, laid out for me. But, you know, the songs are very specific, and right from the get-go we knew that we wanted to keep true to the original recording of the record, because why change what you've worked so hard to make that way anyway? There were a few things we personally that I wanted to fix, that I think I have kind of fixed on this record. So that end of it, I mean, we kind of had our vision. In the beginning, we were doing a little bit of A-Bing. You know, we'd listen to the Mood Swings record, we'd go, are we going to lose? We can't lose anything. You know what I mean? It's got to have that same kind of fire, but it's got to be better than that was, or else what's the point of doing this? And, you know, so it was a bit of a learning curve at the beginning of it, just figuring out how we felt about it and figuring out what the stuff was going to start. Like, we had to start recording it, basically. We knew the tracks we were going to play. We knew the parts we were going to play. We knew all those things. But we didn't know exactly how it was going to sound with our new kind of production know-how over 20 years. I should hope we got a trick or two. You know, so... So when all that started, after the first couple things started going down, I think we relaxed a lot and went, okay, you know what, this is all going to be fine. We just need to move ahead and do what we're doing. So we kind of got into that. As far as the guitar playing, yes. It was another animal, because since the Scarum Band, I haven't been doing a ton of rock at all, really. I mean, I practice all the time and I play, but I've really been going down a different road personally as a guitarist. I mean, I've started to fall in love with guys like Brad Paisley, and you know what I mean? The country genre is phenomenal, man. Those guitar players are ripping. So I've been kind of getting into that stuff over the last few years, which led me to that tour that I did with that other artist. But it's a different thing. It's a completely different style of playing. It's not that it's not challenging, technical, fast, all of it. In fact, I find it far more difficult than doing the rock stuff that I'm doing, but I was doing that for a while, wasn't doing the rock thing. So it took a whole lot of practicing on my part to go, like, how did I do that again? Or what's going on there? I can't really, you know, luckily we had the old tracks to go back and listen to, and which is probably half the reason that it's very true to the original, because we literally knew what we did on the first album, and we basically replaced parts. And again, a few songs, we added a few things, but it's very, very true to the original album, I think. So yeah, it was quite a process, man. It was really quite a process.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is the changes you guys made to some of the tunes, it's very subtle. And yeah, you have to really know that record to know that there's something a little bit different there. I got to say, I think your tone on Jealousy, it sounds awesome, man. The just really bluesy. I mean, it's always been kind of a bluesy track, but
yeah. But I missed it on the first recording of it. I completely missed it, and it's so funny you say that. That's exactly one of the songs that I was so happy that I was going to get to revisit and do it right for the first time. You know?
Oh yeah. Your tone is just amazing on that one too, man. I'm going to make my pick, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Sure.
But which song was kind of the most challenging for you to go back and re-record? My guess was Had Enough, just because there's a lot of stuff going on guitar-wise in that, but you can always go back to No Justice because of the solo work and stuff. But my money's on Had Enough.
We'll be right back.
that intro piece is ridiculous. It's like, it's not even playable. I don't even play it live, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's I pulled it together in the studio, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend like it was easy. You know, it's a bit of a challenge, again, because, and I have no bones about saying it, I really hadn't played that kind of stuff in years. Even in the old days, I never did that part of the song live. Mm-hmm. So, but I was into that headspace, and that's the kind of guitar playing I was playing at the time. So it was a bit of a trick to kind of learn that and play it well enough that I was happy with what came out. And to be totally honest, after listening to, just like I feel about the whole thing, actually as a blanket, I will just say that I think we bettered everything. As far as my playing, I think personally, I just have more command of the instrument, regardless of whether I could play the licks as fast in the beginning or whatever. But to me, it's like, you know, 5% that only I would probably notice. Maybe a few other people, I don't know. But to me, I think it just sounds, we sound like a more confident band. You know what I mean? Harry's vocals are better. He's less yelling, more singing. There's so many reasons that I think we've done a far better job on this particular version of the record.
Well, yeah, that was my next question to ask him, and I forgot to ask him, was which song did he go back and say, oh, crap, are you kidding me? Why did I do that? You know, with some of the high screams he's doing. But his voice has just held up so well over the years.
Harry's a better singer than he's ever been, without a shadow of a doubt. You know what I mean? Technically, anyway, he's always had kind of his tone and, you know, what people loved about him back then. I certainly don't think he's lost anything. He's just got more in control of it. You know, you got to remember, we were kids when we made that record. We were like 22 years old, 23 years old.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then to go back, I mean, what do you guys... Oh, it's 20 years ago, so you're in your 40s now.
Yep.
Which,
yep.
You're not old by any standard, because I'm in my 40s too, at least.
Yeah, no, definitely not old, but just, you know, more seasoned and experienced. And, you know, we weren't really producers back then. That was the second record we'd ever produced, the first one being our own. And even that, we only co-produced, you know what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
to go from that level to now, we've done hundreds of albums between the two of us. You know what I mean? Like, hundreds of records. And then to come to the point where we're actually re-recording stuff, and, you know, actually being able to listen to it and go, that was good about this, and that was not good about this, so let's fix that, you know.
Well, that's cool. Let's talk about some of the newer tracks, and then that's the awesome thing about this deal is, A, you get a bonus DVD, which we'll talk about in a minute, but you get three brand new tracks, and talking to Harry, he said, we didn't want to go back and say, okay, we got to write this in the mood swings, so we're just going to write whatever feels good. Whatever feels right for right now. And that's always been kind of y'all's motto, which I highly respect. But the songs, to me, fit in very, very nicely into the package. Probably my favorite right now is Anarchy. How did that song come together? Is that an idea you brought in, or did you guys all kind of sit around and just jam it out?
Well, there's no jamming. When we write songs, it's me and Harry. That's pretty much it. That's how it goes. And especially for the Scarum stuff, I mean, obviously Harry can write on his own, I can write on my own, but when we get together and do our thing, he handles melodies and lyrics, and I handle the whole musical landscape and riffs and all that, everything, right? Like, I build the tracks and he sings on them, basically is how it works. And funny enough, here again, this has happened a number of times in our journey, but I had a bunch of songs that were ready to start being put together for a more of a rock, like a half instrumental, half vocal album.
Mm-hmm.
So of my own, a solo record. So
oh, nice.
All three of those songs are ideas that were going to go on that record.
Oh, wow.
And but because, I mean, it was one of those things, right? Obviously, we want to start with good ideas. We want to start with stuff that's kind of of the ilk. And I had all these ideas around. So, and this has, again, happened many times in our past when we start a record. I want to bring the best of what I have to the table. You know what I mean? Harry's game is always on. I like to think my game is pretty on too, and I had a pile of good ideas that I thought were good ideas, and I played them all for Harry. He picked three of them, and those are the ideas that we went with.
Oh, that's killer. Well, I gotta ask you about the solo. You kind of do that, and please, I hope I don't offend you, kind of a circus-y type thing. It kind of threw me for a loop. In Anarchy.
Yeah.
And I was like, where did that come from? But it's cool, it works.
you know, it's one of those things, right? It was that part was not written first. It was not the idea to do that. I was writing, which I sometimes do with the Scarum stuff. I'll write the background for the solo first, and I'll try to do something odd or weird that makes me go outside of my box. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the section under that part goes boom, boom. It's this really weird, lilty kind of circusy feel. And I was working on the solo, and I got to that part, and I went, what if I did that circus thing here? And I did it, and I just went, oh, no, it works perfectly. So I thought, screw it, you know, put it in. I mean, I love the comedy in music. I love the moments of, like, you know, all of a sudden it's really intense, and then you do something just that's so off the wall and so weird but fits well, and it just all kind of lined up. Like I said, that was not the original intent. All the rhythm tracks, everything was done for that song before I even thought of actually putting that part in. But it also made a lot of sense with, you know, with the song itself, right? The world is a circus now.
Mm-hmm. True.
It is ridiculous what's going on out there. So it just kind of fit in with the anarchy theme, and then, you know, making that statement, and it worked musically. It was just one of those weird happy accidents, I think.
Well, it's awesome because we talked to John Oliva recently, and he's got his first solo record he's ever put out. And he does a song. It's a military song. I think it's called Soldier. And I think the producer or somebody went in and put a flute in it. And he came in to listen. The guy's like, check this out. He's like, are you freaking kidding me? A flute in my song? It just went kind of ballistic. And the guy said, well, let's process it, do this. And it ends up working. But I mean, it's the weirdest, funnest things that you don't intend to be in there, but then they end up working, and it makes the song just that much cooler, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, again, it's like, to me, it's so cool that it wasn't planned, and it just kind of happened that way. It was never meant to go that way, but that's the overriding feeling of that part, and it just begged for it, and it fit flawlessly, so.
Another great new track is Brighter Day. I really like that track. Is there a story on how that track came together for you?
Not really. It's kind of the same thing. You know what I mean? It started with the riff. I had the riff. We started building the song around that. Our songs kind of develop in the same vein. You know what I mean? Like, we'll have the parts that represent the verse, pre-chorus, chorus, usually. You know, once we've decided on the songs, Harry literally takes that and starts working on melody ideas. Or I may have a melody idea. I throw at him and say, what about this? And then he kind of takes it and changes it to make it into whatever works for him as a singer, because every singer is completely different, right? When I'm singing stuff, I can't write a song, sing it, and then have Harry sing it. It just doesn't work. It's, everybody has their own approach. So in this particular band, I'm the musical force, so I kind of do that and let him do his thing. Like I said, this time it was completely autonomous. I did all the music, he did all the melody and lyrics.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And yeah, so as far as that song goes, though, I mean, really, as far as what it's about, I'm sure you spoke to him about it, and you'll get a way better answer because he wrote the lyrics. But but the songs develop the same way, you know what I mean? They start with an idea, we get the verse, pre-chorus, chorus. Harry goes off with that, starts working on melodies and lyrics for those parts. I finish the song. I'll put in whatever the bridge is going to be, or, you know, then write the solo section, work on all that, start building the track, and then we come back together again once we both have some stuff to start throwing together, and it just builds till we're done.
Awesome. Well, I was going to ask you, but I think I know the answer. I was going to ask you if it's kind of harder to write the new material because you've been kind of out of Harum Scarum mode for a while, but you were saying that you had some ideas for a rock solo record, so I guess it wasn't really too off the beaten path for you.
Not at all, man. They were all written. All those ideas were kind of there already. But I mean, again, musically, I kind of, you know, am a big part of why we sound the way we sound. So it's not surprising that if I write a bunch of instrumental-ish sounding stuff that's rock guitar oriented, it's going to sound like Harum Scarum riff. You know, so they did, and they worked. And that's kind of.
Well, what's the status of your rock solo record? Are you still planning on doing that? Your plate's pretty full now, but in the future?
You know, it's crazy. I'm like I said, I've been doing a lot of playing out lately. I'm playing. We have all this touring and stuff, which is kind of going to close up the end of or the beginning of November. But I mean, I'm playing with another Canadian duo called the Stellas. They're a country duo here that I've known for ages. We grew up in the same town, and I used to work with them a lot when we were all younger. They have since moved to Nashville. Their kids have become world famous. Their names are Lennon and Maisie. They're this crazy internet sensation. And anyway, they're basically going to be on Zach Brown's label in the States, and we're working on the record in November, and then I'm going to be playing with them as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's you know, it's a crazy time. there's a lot going on, and sorry, I didn't even know where that question began because I got off on a tangent.
I just think it's awesome, and you guys, you and Harry both, are, in my opinion, and call me out if I'm wrong, but you guys have, you know, you had your success with Harum Scarum, but you both were able to step away from Harum Scarum and probably be even more successful than you even were in Harum Scarum and, you know, keep a career in music and stay extremely busy.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've both been kind of doing a lot of it for a long time. Harry's been longer than me, actually, as far as working with other bands and having a studio, and we both kind of got into that world, unfortunately, like everything in our lives, far too late. because it's all, even that, for engineers and producers and everyone I know, like, the whole thing is just kind of going down the toilet now. Everybody's doing their own thing because that's the only thing to do. But, to say we were more successful, I don't know. Again, timing was always against us. I think the most interesting thing about me and Harry is that we've managed to do this despite our lack of success in some ways, you know. Somehow we've had just enough that this is our job. This has always been our job. We've always made music for a living. It's never stopped when our band stopped. You know what I mean? It's just, we've been very fortunate to just have enough success that we can be in the music business, make music for a living, and live a comfortable life.
Well, let's talk about your recent show at Melodic Rock Fest this past weekend. How did that go for you guys?
It was great, actually.
So, was it well attended and everything?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, by all accounts, it was the best Melodic Rock Fest they've had so far, whatever that means, because it's the only one I've attended. So, you know, I'm assuming it was successful as far as the guys that put it on, as far as Andrew McNeese, who's a very good friend of ours, and obviously, you know, I thank him quite a bit for all the effort. It was it's unbelievable to see how much goes into him putting that show on. That man deserves some serious kudos for what he's doing for what's left of that genre, you know.
I think it's awesome. He's all based all the way over in Australia, and he's setting this stuff up in America. That's all.
Oh, yeah. Setting it up, coming and flying over here for a couple weeks, being away from his wife and kids. Like, it's crazy. The guy's so dedicated and just such a good dude. This is our one of our first meetings. I think I met him once before, but this is the first time I actually had a chance to talk to him. He's just such a nice guy, you know. It's just really, like, just so supportive of that kind of music. It's amazing.
And this was y'all's first show as Harum Scarum since 08?
Well, no, not our first show, but our first, we did a couple shows two, to be specific. We did two warm-up shows just at small clubs just to kind of basically do a rehearsal. But, yeah, this is basically the first show of what we consider to be, you know, kind of whatever. It was like our first show. The others were sort of more rehearsals.
Oh, cool, cool. And it felt good to be back on stage doing this? And
oh, absolutely.
Awesome.
It's fun. Stan's a new addition. He's great. He's really fun to play off live. And, I mean, the band, we've done just enough rehearsing and just enough, you know, playing out that we haven't killed it. And it just feels like we're about to start. Now we got two shows in Japan this week, and then we come back, and then three full weeks in Europe. So just about by time we're done, the band should be amazing. Just in time to stop.
That's awesome. Are there any plans of maybe recording a live DVD of you guys doing this one night?
Not really. I mean, I don't really see that happening. I mean, we've got a little recording unit thing that we're kind of filming some video and doing some audio. And who knows, maybe one day down the road it might end up coming out on a DVD. I mean, we don't know what's going on with this band on any level, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's so up in the air. And even to call it a band is kind of ridiculous at the moment. I mean, we've got Darren back for now, but he's leaving to go sing with Jakey Lee. You know, so he's going to be gone. Stan does a million other things as well. I'm busy with other things. Harry's busy with other things. We're all doing other stuff. I think me and Harry have basically committed to each other anyway to doing another Harum Scarum record at the very least. As far as who's going to be in the band, what's going to happen, are we going to play, like all that stuff is completely up in the air. I think the only thing we've really decided is that because there's been some really good reaction, especially to the bonus tracks, because that's kind of the direction we want to go in, that we're probably going to actually go ahead and do a new record.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That was my next question. Yeah, Harry, you hadn't mentioned that yet, so we have breaking news from Pete Lesperance.
Yeah, well, and again, I could be lying or change my mind, so I don't know. We'll see. That's the beauty of being in Harem Scarum, is it really doesn't matter. If we just, if one of us calls the other and goes, you know what, I don't really feel like doing this, and then I go, yeah, I don't feel like doing it, let's not do it. We won't.
Dude, I got to say, it's crazy. I love your attitude, and it's just like, it is what it is. It's going to be what it's going to be, and if we don't want to do it, we don't do it. You know, it's just, you
well,
kind of...
You know, I mean, that's what it's come down to. There's not enough money in the music business anymore, or at least in any one facet of the music business. From our perspective, I'm sure there is if you're Nickelback or any number of the, you know, the real bands that are out there doing what they're doing. But, you know, for us, it's just like, yeah, we can either do this or not. We're doing the tour because we wanted the tour again, because we thought it would be fun, you know? We did the record because people seem to kind of, or at least whoever's left of that fan base, I mean, they still give a shit. So we thought we'd give something back to them. It's not like no one's getting rich off Harem Scarum, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we're doing it at this point in our lives as 44-year-old men. We're going out and doing it because we feel like doing it again.
Well, that's killer, dude. And
yeah.
I wish you could make it to Texas. I actually, like we talked about last week, I wish I could have made Chicago to see you guys. But hey, you never know. Stranger things have happened. Maybe this record will blow up a little more, and maybe you can do a few more U.S. states before you shut her down again for a little while.
Well, you know, as far as that goes, it's one of those things where the only way that would really happen is if there were festival dates or something, because there's just no way we're going to generate any kind of fan base that's going to be enough to do a tour. But if there's a festival that includes that kind of music the way Andrews does, I mean, who knows, even with Andrew, if he does another Melodic Rock Fest next year or the year after, we may still be involved in something like that if he asked us. You know, again, Harem Scarum is such a... You know, it's such an up in the air thing at the best of times, just because it's not even a real band anymore. It's mine and Harry's project, and that's kind of what we do. And you know, so anything can happen. It really all depends on supply and demand. If there's no demand, well, there's not going to be any supply because you know, because we're going to be busy doing other stuff that's working for us at the moment. So.
Well, one last question in regards to playing out and stuff. What is your take or thoughts on these? This seems like the new craze, these rock cruises. Is that something that you guys would look at if it were offered to?
Oh, my God, sure. If somebody calls us up and says, hey, you want to come on a boat for a week and come play a couple sets? Absolutely.
I think that's the new trend because those things are selling out pretty damn fast.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty cool idea when you think about it. It's a vacation. It's, you know, you get to see some bands you might like, and it's you're on a ship. I mean, how bad can it be?
Exactly.
Really?
That's
a good idea to me.
Yeah, exactly. Just dodge all the really, really drunk people.
Well, exactly, which is everybody in this genre. So.
Exactly.
No offense to all of you.
Well, Pete, before we let you go, is anything you would like to tell the fans out there today?
Oh, you know what? Honestly, I would just like to thank anybody who has supported us in the past. If at any time you were a fan of Harem Scarum, or, you know, if now you are just learning of our stuff and you like it, whatever the case, you know, I would just like to thank anybody who's ever supported our band on that level, because it's a pretty special thing being able to make music for your life. And it's only at this point in my life that I'm really coming to grips with everything and what it actually means to me, and it's a pretty cool thing. So for anyone who's ever helped us out, it is appreciated.
Well, Pete, we want to thank you coming back on the RightToRock.com here on the Genghis and Ragman show.
Thank you.
It
man.
Is always a pleasure and an honor to talk to you, sir.
You have to give my love to Genghis.
This has been Genghis
and Ragman,
and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X. Adam and Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show, so what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out, and keep checking us out. And horns up.